So today I am talking about influence and persuasion in the world of coaching. I have with me Perpetua, Dr. Perpetua Neo, who studied at UCL and Cambridge. She's written and been featured by people like Business Insider, by Huffington Post, and one other particular name of note that I should
Forbes.
Know. Forbes, that's yeah. it. And I want to know a couple of things. One, how on earth we get over anxiety when it comes to pitching? And two, how does Perpetua use influence and persuasion to pitch herself to her clients? Because one of the toughest things in the world is to get people to work on themselves. So how on earth do psychologists and coaches get people to work on themselves?
Hi, Andrew. Thank you for having me here today.
Not at all. Thank you very much for coming.
My
pleasure.
You
are here because you know a thing or two about persuasion, given what you do.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you tell me and the audience that we know a little bit more about you, your background. Take us way back to when you went to university mm-hmm. and how you got to being a coach today.
So my name is Perpetua, and my clients call me Dr. P or Dr. Neo. Essentially, I'm a psychologist and a coach for high achievers. And what I do is I help these high achievers to perform phenomenally and lead wisely in all areas of their lives and their career. Because I've been coaching people for a long time. In my teenage years, people would come to me saying, hey, I have this problem, can we solve it? And it was very, very rational. And being very cerebral, being very perfectionist, that worked beautifully for me. That as I went to the therapy world, it became all about learning to sit with who you are as a human being. And so today I combine these different modalities as well as everything else I'm interested in, you know, things like plant medicine and ancient wisdom. And I give my clients a base book signature package.
I think one of the big questions a lot of people will be asking is, how on earth do you start a career in coaching? Because you have to pitch for business just like anybody else. Tell us how you were able to get new clients in the first place.
Well, you got to find what is your signature. You know, so many people think that all you got to do is set up a website, play a little bit of SEO, and the clients will come. But that doesn't happen. If they do, maybe you're extremely lucky. What you got to do is have the courage to find out who you really are and to create the signature of this method that can help your clients. Okay, so for instance, my method isn't just about the next magical three-letter or four-letter therapy. You know, when people say, hey, I heard you do this, can you do this for me? I will explain to them, what is it that you really want? You know, what can we do for you? How can we get you there? Where are you now? Because that essentially is how you want to be a coach. You don't just look at, say, NLP or whatever three-letter magical antidote. You know, so first thing is, what's your signature? Second thing is obviously the courage to put yourself out there. And the best way is to actually have a network of people that you trust, that support you, right? Because much as I love the internet, much as I love technology, you know, it's not the only thing. When you work with clients, you work with people. So your network is your people. So essentially I started going out there, speaking to different people in my industry and people in parallel industries. So for instance, I have a really great network of supportive psychiatrists whom I speak to all the time, we lunch all the time. And that's how we create a network where people get referred to me. I also have networks of different kinds of spiritual coaches, business coaches, and personal development coaches. So essentially we refer to each other, we support each other in our work, and the other way of being a coach is, of course, to promote yourself besides with other people in the same industry, is you got to put yourself out there really courageously. So essentially, I start to write because that leverages my interest and passion for writing and for words. So that aligns with who I am. So I started to write for Huffington Post, for Mind Body Green, and for Thrive Global. And when I say write, I don't mean in terms of, say, an article that says 5 tips on how to sleep better. You know, I think those are quite tired and they're kind of done to death, you know. I write not just the best tips that I can find. I want to give value and I want to tell my own story as well in order to inspire someone. And that's how the persuasion comes in. You know, persuasion isn't something that's icky, that, you know, that's something that most coaches need to get away from in their heads that this is something sleazy. Actually, you've got a skill that you want to give to someone else. You've got value that you can add. So how do you actually add that value to a person's life? For me, my signature method in terms of how I convey that is to tell bits of my own story so that a person can relate. Because people don't really care how much you know until they know you care.
Okay, makes sense. So your way of persuading individuals is to relate to yourself,
mm-hmm.
and relate your personal experiences to mm-hmm. what they might be going through. So imagine I was a reluctant referral,
mm-hmm.
and a psychiatrist has said, I need to see someone like yourself. Mm-hmm. I reluctantly go and see you, mm-hmm. and I don't like you.
Mm-hmm.
It could be possible.
Of course.
How then do you persuade me? What methodology would you use? What techniques would you use to persuade mm-hmm. me to work with you?
Well, the first thing I would do is to persuade myself first, you know, because a lot of times we take things very personally. And sometimes it really isn't my fault that you don't like me. Maybe you just have a thing against the industry. Maybe you've tried a lot of different methods. So the first thing is to really be centered in myself and know that it really is not my fault. So that's the kind of headspace that I walk into the room with, or I enter Skype or FaceTime window with.
Okay.
Hey, the second thing would be, I would say that since you're here now already, since you're paid for it, or since your insurance or anything else is paying for it, let's make the best use of this time. So that by the time you finish this 60 minutes, you're going to think, I've had some value out of it, even if I don't see you again.
Okay, so I come along with my preconceptions and mm-hmm. my fears, and you try and address them all within 60 minutes to try and convert me from the unconverted to the converted.
Mm-hmm.
And you do that by addressing my objections mm-hmm. and trying to unearth what are my assumptions about you.
Yes.
Okay. And I'm interested because you said to me once before that a lot of what you do centers around language mm-hmm. and the words that you use.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about how you persuade people through the use of language.
So language is something that makes us human. Yeah, I know that dolphins have language, monkeys have language, but as humans, you know, language can also be symbolic. So essentially, does this person I'm talking to understand what I'm saying? You know, if they understand what I'm saying, is it just up here or is it in the body? Because the body remembers a lot of different things, and you know, we are very, very human. So that's something that we gotta embrace. So one thing about language that, you know, we talked about the last time was using everyday speak, no jargon. So if you were a psychiatrist, for instance, I might speak to you in the language of jargon because we understand each other. Okay, that is a heuristic for us to immediately know that, okay, you've got general anxiety disorder. This is what this person looks like, okay? But as a person who is a non-medical professional, we speak in something that you understand. So let me give you an example of how I use language. So recently I was asked to describe what gaslighting means. And that's something that is very common in toxic relationships because that's something I specialize in. People who have been involved with personalities who are part of the dark triad. So we're talking about psychopaths, narcissists, and Machiavellians.
Okay, yeah. So you work yeah. with people who are high performers, yeah. type A women,
yeah.
who come across dangerous individuals in the workplace.
Yes, yes.
Carry on.
And so they'll, and this is termed gaslighting that came from an American
gaslighting.
Movie.
Gaslighting.
Yes. In the 1940s.
Okay.
Okay, so people kind of have a little feel about what gaslighting is. We know is that when reality is changed, and when you look at definitions, people, you know, in all these articles, they will write things about when someone changes bits in your reality. So that's when you can actually understand it, because when I say gaslight, nobody knows what that is. A light? Guess coming up, you know, it doesn't make any sense. But then if you go a step further, what I call everyday language 2.0 or metaphors, that actually connects to the person even more. So I say, that's when somebody screws with your reality. And that's very metaphorical. Everybody knows what screwing with someone is, right? And so when it connects and it clicks here and here, that's when they go, I know she knows what I'm talking about.
So you will use then Perpetua metaphors and similes mm-hmm. to help you feel, so that your client feels attuned to you.
Yes.
And when the client feels attuned to you, they feel like you get them
mm-hmm.
and you understand their problem.
Yes.
and you brought to life something perhaps they've never been able to put into words.
Yes.
And then they say, okay, I trust you, you understand me, I want to work with you.
Yes.
Okay, right. Now, one of the things I think is the greatest challenge of anyone in the medical profession, particularly working with mental health, is persuading somebody to work on themselves. It's great acquiring skills, but what if I have a problem? Perhaps I have got a problem, and perhaps later you'll tell me I have got a problem. But what if I have a particular problem, say I'm neurotic or I'm paranoid, and I worry about how I look all the time? One, me realising that's a problem is in itself a challenge.
Yes.
Two, you then convincing me to work on myself is a challenge. How do you convince people to work on themselves? Because that, to me, is the greatest challenge. When you're pitching a product or a service, that sounds to me much more straightforward than asking someone to actually apply things to themselves. How do you go about that?
Well, I think the first thing is, to be really aware about who your audience is. You cannot help everybody unless they want to be helped. You know, so you got to focus your attention on a group of people who may be a bit lukewarm, but interested. So for instance, okay, let's say you talk about you being a bit neurotic, your fictitious you, okay? So fictitious you is a bit neurotic and you kind of know that something's not quite right, but you're so used to it because it's this muscle that just grows bigger and bigger and it's an autopilot way of you functioning. So for instance, you believe that if you're very high up the corporate ladder or you're a really successful entrepreneur, it's okay to sleep 2 hours a night, you know, machismo and all that stuff. And everybody collapses, right? Everybody drinks a lot. Everybody maybe snorts a lot of cocaine to keep themselves awake. It's normal. So you may not think that it's all right. But there's a part of you, I think there's a part of everybody that knows that something isn't working as well, you know? For instance, somebody else is complaining. You know that you're slipping. You don't feel good about yourself anymore. You wake up with less and less motivation and you look in the mirror, and we're not even talking about physicalities, you just don't recognize who you are, the essence of who you are. So this is when a person kind of knows that there is a problem, and it's when they might start to read a little bit about it. And if you actually check Google, you know, why, you just type something like, why am I so? You might see things like depressed, anxious, worried. And actually a lot of people are searching for that. They may not be voicing it. So what's a really important thing is, you know, for persuasion in the first few steps is to actually get yourself out there and just really in a really warm and supportive sense, lead people gently to know that, yes, what's happening with you is perhaps normal in your industry, is normal in the kind of job that you do or the place you are in your life. But there's also a way out. So for instance, some people don't give it a name because they have no idea there's a name. But, you know, most of us, we're really curious. So essentially, you know, like the person who had knots in her throat, like bowel rising, she didn't know what the name was, but she always felt it, even though it was normal to her. So one day she read my articles and she texted me saying that, you know, I've been reading all the stuff on social anxiety. I think I may be socially anxious. And I started speaking to her saying that, okay, if you're socially anxious, let's hear what's going on. And it turns out that she's not exactly socially anxious. She just has performance anxiety. Okay. So people are actually searching. People want to know what's wrong and what's right. People have this dream eventually to be happy and to feel like they have it all. And so if you can lead people towards this idea that if you work hard on yourself with the right methods, you can actually get there. That is a form of persuasion. It's soft because we can't just, I can't go up to you and say, hey, you're neurotic. It's a horrible judgment.
And what's your hit ratio? So in sales and things like that, you're looking for perhaps 1 in 3, perhaps higher. For you, how many people come to you and then come back again?
About 1 in 3.
1 in 3?
Yeah.
Okay. And why do you think the 2 in 3 don't come back?
Well, most of the times they are just not convinced that it's a problem, it's a big enough problem. They are not at that space in their life when they're ready to do that. Because, you know, for instance, if I have been worried all my life, this is how I see myself. I don't see myself as a person with a busy mind or a person with anxiety. Yeah. I see myself as an anxious person. And this is an identity that is very difficult to shed. Who am I without this new identity? And sometimes you can't force a person to take on something new. You just got to give them what they need in this space and time. So for instance, I might say, hey, here's a quick meditation that you can do. Here are some really great essential oils that you can use that help my clients who don't sleep to sleep well instead. And actually, if I add that kind of value, that's all I need.
Yeah. And one of the things that I talk about in pitching is the idea of the future.
Mm-hmm.
I talk about the past, the present, and the future. Mm-hmm. That's something that is absolutely mandatory.
Yeah.
And when I talk about the future, that's when I tend to have people switched on.
Mm-hmm.
Only yesterday I was talking to a famous makeup artist, and I was describing how people would pitch central heating when central heating was new, and how I would talk about the vision of what it would be like to have central heating in the house, because imagine previously no central heating. You come in the front door and it's cold.
Mm-hmm.
You can't put your bags down and put a pot of tea on because you're so cold, you actually turn the oven on, or you light the fire and it takes an hour to warm up.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, imagine selling and pitching central heating when you talk about the future and how their lives will be in the future. Is there something to the future when you talk to people about the future? Is that a key part of persuading people talking about the future?
Absolutely. So, you know, there's the old school marketing says touch their pain. And much as you can touch a person's pain, you don't just want to leverage on their pain. You want to ask them, where do you really want to be? How do you see yourself? So let's give you an example of a person in a toxic relationship. So this person is pretty successful. She's, you know, everybody thinks she's got it all, but actually when she goes home, she's really frightened, right? And so, you know, when we talk about the future with her, we say, how does it feel like to be free? How does it feel like to reclaim your sense of self-worth and to look in the mirror and tell yourself that I respect you because you made the right decisions in your life? How does it feel to know that you're going to wake up safe, not go home and wonder what's going to happen to you next? And for some people, that's the most amazing future.
There was one of the things I typically say to people is if they have a fear of pitching, they need to practice pitching in a safe environment.
Yeah.
And public speaking clubs are a really good way of doing that. But there are individuals who have more profound issues with pitching and speaking in public, full stop. Tell me a little bit about that smaller group of people who have a challenge around. I think when we spoke last, we spoke about the potential that I help people that get better at pitching, but they already know that they can pitch, for example. So they're going to go and pitch. But some people don't even start in that point. They start further back, where they don't even think they can go and do a pitch in the first place.
Absolutely.
They're the people that typically you would talk to, and they're early on in that life cycle.
Yeah.
How do you help those people?
So with these people, you know, first thing you want to figure out is what makes them so reticent to get through the door to you, for instance.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And often, again, we go back to this worthiness. I'm not good enough.
To stand up in front of lots of people and present something.
Yeah.
Okay.
And one really important thing is to actually clarify that, yeah, you may not have skills, but speak to some people who seem to work the room magically with this amazing charisma. Chances are, half of them were born with it, you know? And by saying born with it, I also mean that they might have been immersed in family environments where that is the normal thing. So that's how you grow up, right? If you grow up seeing your mother anxious all the time, you're probably going to grow up pretty anxious yourself. So in the same way, if I see my parents being social butterflies, working the room, I think that that's my legacy. That's how I do it. So that's half of it, you know. Another half of it, actually, are the people that I've spoken to that I really looked up to as I learned to develop my sense of confidence and my sense of self. And I spoke to them and they told me this. Oh, I grew up terrified. I used to stutter. I was really bad at this. And then I ask, how do you get there? And so they say, I learned. I practice. So essentially, I always tell all my clients and anybody who speaks to me or any of the talks that I give that there's differences between people. You know, two people can look at a person who is so eloquent. For instance, somebody's watching you. They say, oh, Andrew pitches so well. Okay, one person would think, Andrew pitches so well. Oh, but that will never be me. I am lousy. I am bad. It's congenital. Oh, it's too late. I've lost. I missed the boat. Also, the whole gamut of reasons. The other person might think, Andrew pitches fantastically. How do I get there?
Okay.
So the difference is the second person has this growth mindset in which they are willing to work. They're willing to have this courage to fall down, to laugh at themselves, to feel rejected, and to pick themselves up. And when that happens, that is when this person can actually get through the door and be like you.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. it's two person. There's two people. One with a growth mindset. They're the people that come to see me.
Yeah.
And the other individual senses that it's an actual fact.
Yeah.
People that are great at pitching, they can never be like them in the first place. Okay. Right. That's very interesting. And for people that are interested in one of the things that I've noticed in my travels is that a lot of people want to get into coaching from all walks of life. And when they pitch to me, they say to me typically, Andrew, you have a problem. And they don't actually ask me about me and show any interest in me. They just say, I have a problem, and they need, I should give them money in exchange for solving that problem. How do people go about starting off pitching themselves to people in the world of coaching? It sounds to me like you have a respected network that you've built up over time, but you didn't always have that network. So now is different to how a lot of people are, which is they're starting out.
Yeah.
People starting out, trying to establish themselves as coaching, how do they persuade people to come to them? How do they build that network?
Well, the first thing is you don't go around telling people you have a problem before knowing that. I think based on how we chatted the last time, it's actually really repulsive. Right,
yeah, it is
like
impulsive.
You don't know a damn thing about me, and you're telling me I have a problem. How do I know? You get the people's defenses up, and that's when they're not going to hire you. So the first thing is to actually connect the person on a human level. So you know, much as a person could be a potential client, sometimes when I'm on an event, I also want to know the person as a human being, because you could be a potential client, but I may not want to work with you. I have standards, you know. And there's certain kinds of people that I want to add value to, and some kinds of people that I do not want to. So as a coach, you got to be very clear about who you want to serve. And you want to be clear about who you are, about being very genuine. Because human to human, that's how we connect.
So what do you mean by human to human? I hear the phrase a lot. What do you mean by human to human?
Human to human means that, you know, I may have skills, but or people might see me as expert, but fundamentally, I'm a human being like you. You know, I don't want to claim to be superior to you and tell you you've got a problem. If you've got a problem and you tell it to me and you realize that that's my expertise, because I may just weave in something like, oh, you know, somebody I know or somebody I've worked with has something similar, and within this period of time we transformed it for them because they were willing to work on it, and we developed a certain system of doing that. So that's how you work with somebody as a human being. You don't just hard sell. You know, for instance, okay, let me give you an example. In Singapore, where I come from, the some of the spas that I don't go to at all are terrible. Because if I go for a massage, they'll tell me, you've got the stiffest neck ever. I've never seen something so bad. And then they proceed to just hammer me down and sell all sorts of things to me. I'm just like, no, you're not taking my money because you're just haranguing me. I'm supposed to be relaxed. You know, I'd rather go to a spa that is £200 an hour that doesn't harass me, because I'm going back there again. Yeah. So essentially, the coach who goes up to you and tells you your problem is that cheaper spa that's annoying, and you cannot be that cheaper spa.
Okay.
Yeah.
And finally then, if given your background as a psychologist, working with people and influencing them, what would you say are the three most powerful techniques that you use to influence people?
So like I said, language.
Okay.
Speak in everyday language, but also speak in that language that makes it clarifies to them that you know what you're talking about. Okay. Another thing would be to own your story, because everybody's got story, right? I mean, like, everybody's risen from some darkest points in their lives. And actually, this can be your badge of honor rather than something that is a scar that you try to hide with a lot of shame. Because when you own your story, that's when you actually develop who you are, your signature as a person. And that's what draws people to you. Because if you're genuine, then people actually understand who you are. And you actually resonate the like-minded kind of clients whom you want to work with and whom you can grow together with as a person. So essentially, you are your best form of persuasion, whether it's in terms of the words you develop, the language you use, or how you market yourself.
Okay.
Yeah, you got to be the living embodiment of that.
So you need accessible language, you need a narrative.
Yeah.
Third point?
The third point, you got to be genuine.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that, you know, a lot of coaches, we have qualifications, we have the competence, right? But really, sometimes when somebody is in need of help, they're not going to just look at what qualifications you have, where it comes from. Sometimes it doesn't mean a thing to them, unless they're from the top or the best in the world. But that's mostly, you know, when, for instance, if I want to choose a surgeon, I might choose the best surgeon, right? But in other cases, sometimes I just want to choose somebody whom I know understands me. So being genuine while being competent and always being able to learn, not to put yourself on this pedestal, but just to connect with people.
Thanks for listening to my podcast. I produce these for free. And one of the most natural things for all people to want to do is to give back after they've received something. You can give back by simply sharing, reviewing, rating, or giving feedback on this podcast.